We have, I think, one or two other people that may be joining. So we'll leave them confused, but for us, so we know who's here at the table, I guess if we can call things to order, is that good? And go around the table, our meeting of the Strategic Planning Committee is trying to at least start a conversation so that we can begin educating ourselves on the Medicaid voucher program that is coming at us like a freight train, and we don't want to be on the tracks and get hit. We'd like to have some forward thinking of how we can handle this. There are a lot of moving parts to it, and being from a very small rural county where people have no transportation, they can't get to the traditional one-stop centers. And we probably have proportionally more people who are on Medicaid. So we're looking for some ways and solutions and thinking outside the box, stealing a good idea anywhere we can get it. So start looking and talking and discussing what we're facing. So today is to give us a starting point to collecting some of that information and kind of sharing what we know and where we are. And we'll have ongoing meetings because this is 2018, but we thought starting early would be a good idea instead of waiting until the last minute. So that is our main thing we're looking at, but being strategic planning and facing an unusual future for our area too, we will be adding some topics to this as to, as a workforce board, how we're going to connect our employers with the people that they need. They can't find enough, even in our little area, can't find enough workers. And yet we have workers who can't find the jobs. There are a lot of interesting programs out there. Again, what can we do to use them, implement them, get word out about them, and do our best to get ahead? We're competing not only within Kentucky, other ad districts, but within the United States and globally. I just came from a futurist camp, which was very fascinating with what they're doing. 48% of the jobs today will be automated by 2035. That means one out of two of us won't have a job anymore. It'll be automated. One out of two. So as you're looking at some of the different trends, if we can start thinking of and getting ahead of, it'll help us with all we're doing with our workforce. So again, thank you all for being here. But if we can start around the table, we'll get an idea of who we have today.
Hannah Gregory, I'm with Bluegrass Ad.
Kelly Cummins, I'm with the waiver team.
Christy Putnam, I'm with the waiver team also.
Lisa Farmer, I'm the director of adult education in Bourbon County.
John Doherty with AmTech, electrical contractors.
And I'm Tracy Pratt-Savage, economic development director in Nicholas County. I'm also co-founder of a group called Licking Valley Adventures, which is pushing a, what we call, a rural regionalism, which we see as kind of an answer to the future on our dying little cities and towns.
And I'm Mabel Duke, the workforce director of the Bluegrass Local Workforce Area.
I'm Victor Ponder, director of operations for ESCAR.
I'm Todd Linton, I'm the one-stop operator.
Tammy Underwood, project director for ESCAR.
Jennifer Hayes, operations supervisor of ESCAR.
Katie Wright, quality control for Bluegrass Ad.
Amy Glasscock, Bluegrass Ad.
Very good. So, thank you very much. We have an agenda and a lot of things we'd like to share today. So, to get going, we've got kind of our roll call all taken care of. Todd Jones may still be joining us today. He's running late. And Malcolm Ratchford is with Community Action. Again, we were thinking about and looking at, if our people can't get to the one-stop centers, or not all of them, is there a way to supplement what we've got at the one-stop centers? Community Action has presence and deals with a lot of the Medicaid people. So trying to get Malcolm's input on perhaps how we can work with them, we thought would be a good idea. So he'll be joining as well. So, Christy, I understand that you have a nice PowerPoint.
I do, and it may not have, it had a little bit more time to prepare specifically for you all. I probably would have made some changes to it, especially around SNAP and the SNAP E&T parts of it, but this is a good overview of the Medicaid waiver itself. And I won't bore you with too many details, but you know, there is a lot of information in this PowerPoint. But just kind of want to give you the philosophy that we're operating with as a team and then across cabinets and go from there. So whenever you are ready, we can.
So you're saying team,
yes,
and cabinets, et cetera.
Yes.
Can you step up just a little bit? I'm hearing 20 hours, Medicaid, waiver. Can you just... Hi, I'm your best friend. Can you tell me what the heck this is?
I can do that, yes. So the SNAP already has a work requirement, as I'm sure you're all aware. There are some populations in SNAP that have a work requirement. They're the ABODs, the able-bodied adults without dependents. The Kentucky Health Waiver adds what's called community engagement, which, regardless of what you've seen in the media, is not a work requirement only. It is a specifically called community engagement for a reason, because it's a number of different activities.
You didn't miss anything. We went around and told who's who.
So. Okay.
Thanks, Doug.
So the community engagement component of the Kentucky Health Waiver, which, by the way, we're still in negotiations with the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. It has not been approved yet, but we are very optimistic about those conversations. They've gone really well. That community engagement component could be work, and we cover all that in this presentation, but it could be work, it could be volunteer activities, could be education and training, occupational training, caregiving for somebody else who's not a dependent. So there are really a lot of different ways that Medicaid community engagement requirement can be met for you know, whoever has to do it. Initially, in the original waiver proposal, there was a graduated hours requirement that started at 0, and then it went to 5 after 3 months. And there was a lot of concern expressed in the hearings about that. And there was also a lot of concern expressed by our business partners, employers, agencies, who said there's no way anybody's going to take on somebody for 5 hours a month. It's just not a good place to start, and it's not going to take that person where they need to go. So one of the revisions we sent in to CMS was we requested to just go ahead and make the starting point 20 hours per week for that community engagement requirement, and we felt like that was also more aligned with most of the SNAP and TANF requirements. Those range generally between 20 and 30 hours per week, so we felt like that would be less confusing to our beneficiaries to be able to understand what the requirement is. If someone is meeting a work or education requirement for SNAP or TANF, they're considered to be meeting it for Medicaid as well. So there are some nuances to that community engagement that really are kind of coordinated with the other benefits programs that have those work and education requirements.
So it's kind of like, if you want to get Medicaid, you have to give back 20 hours.
Yes.
And it could be in education, in volunteering, in work, etc.
Right.
And that's in your home community? Or are we going to bus people around, or we're just deciding?
It can be specific to that individual, whatever. If they have an opportunity and they choose to go to a different community, that's certainly going to meet that requirement. The intent is for them to be in their own community. I mean, that is part of the intent. However, we're not going to say to somebody, no, you can't go from Louisville to Maysville for a volunteer activity if that's what they choose to do, or whatever, for a work project. But the intent really is to be more regionally focused and build and strengthen the connections between that individual and their resources in the community, and you know, their contributions and interaction with different community agencies, resources, employers, whatever that is. Because the overarching goal, and you know, again, I can talk through all the different slides, or we can just have a conversation about it.
Well, I want to go through. It's just to lay the groundwork.
Set the stage.
It's basically, it's Kentucky. This is where it came from,
yes.
And this is the overall intent. Is that yes, you can continue to get Medicaid, and this is for people who don't have dependent children. You can continue to get it, but we want something in return. In other words, it's not just given away as a free program. There is a general thought that people appreciate more if they have to give back versus they just get.
Right, and it's kind of a threefold thought, if I could. It's the thought of having that investment in receiving the benefit, but it's also the thought of returning Medicaid to a safety net program rather than a long-term insurance plan, because we as a state can't pay for that. You know, we're having a hard time as it is. The third part of it, so to move somebody to self-sufficiency, but the third part of it is really intended to address the health outcomes issues. Part of the social determinants of health is looking at that. You know, there's a great health outcome when somebody is involved in some sort of activity in their community. And so because of the combination of our low work participation, our poor health outcomes, and our inability to continue to pay for the expansion the way it's currently going, this is the kind of coordinated approach. And again, the community engagement requirement is not applied to everybody who is on Medicaid. There are a lot of exemptions, but it's primarily intended to the similar population, the able-bodied adults without dependents who are in the SNAP ENT program. It's the able-bodied population, primarily those who don't have dependents, but there may be circumstances where there's a two-parent household and one parent's the primary caregiver, the other parent is not, and they would have that community engagement requirement. So that's kind of the nutshell version. And as we started working on this from a Medicaid perspective, because I actually am in the Medicaid office, that's where I live, and I do mean live, we started looking at, you know, it's not an isolated program. I mean, and we never intended it to be isolated, but it just sort of built more and more. So we recognize that from a, you know, kind of a technology standpoint, from an approach to workforce development, from all these different economic development perspective, it made more sense to really bring in all the cabinets who are impacted by, you know, poor health outcomes, lack of workforce to pull from, you know, all these education issues that we're facing. So all of these different issues kind of folded into this Kentucky Health Initiative. And we've got all the Cabinet for Economic Development, Education and Workforce, the Labor Cabinet, obviously Cabinet for Health and Family Services. They've all been pulled in to this effort. So we're, you know, everybody is involved at this point.
Okay, very good. Any questions, clarifications for Kelly? Okay.
So, and Kelly's role has been, because our initially, the thought was, okay, well, we're going to have to assist with some sort of community engagement case management, something like that. And the initial thought was, well, we would just do an RFP and have a statewide service provider. And the more we met and talked with, especially some of our local workforce boards, employers, they said, well, you know, we really kind of already do that. Why couldn't we look to having the workforce boards? And so that's how we landed at bringing in the local workforce boards as potential service providers for helping with the community engagement population and SNAP, ENT, and those sorts of things. And Kelly has been traveling the state. He's been here a full 3 months already, so he's well seasoned.
I was wondering if 3 months was the time limit.
You're considered a veteran right now. But he's been meeting with our local DCBS and workforce offices to kind of look at processes and how the flow happens or doesn't happen. And we know that there have been challenges with handoffs between agency to agency. And so he's been looking at all of that and really having the conversations with workforce boards about, you know, what's working for you and what's not. And from a technology perspective, I don't know if you want to.
I think that's pretty much summed it up. The technology is probably the key thing from my perspective, because there's a lot of information that's gathered on the clients, whether you're on the DCBS side and they're using Benefine or the new system Salesforce. We want to bring that data forward. In other words, the client doesn't have to keep going through that every time they come into an office to try to get help, right? So the data should be there. So what we're trying to do is look at processes that are taking place on the DCBS side and on the workforce side, and then say, hey, if the data's there, do you still have to do this for them? Is that process better? From a career coach perspective, do you do Kentry or do you do assessments and coaching? So one of the things I'm really driven by is, hey, I don't want them to be Kentry. which is what they're doing, and the clients get upset because they say, I've already given you guys this information, because they just see it's the state, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want them to get back to the coaching and assessments and helping people get back to, you know, on their feet or on some path to employment or community service or whatever. So that's what I've focused on.
Very good. Very helpful. So if you want to take us through.
Okay. Sure. And again, this particular presentation is kind of our Medicaid health, Kentucky health focused overview, but I will give kind of a verbal overview of where we are with the SNAP employment training and how that all ties into this. But this will give you at least an understanding of, if you haven't been exposed to what Kentucky Health is, it gives you a good overview of what it involves.
Because if we don't have healthy workers,
who's right. going to come here to, oh, good, you've got all the people who are fat with cancer, et cetera, et cetera. We want to move here so we can put them all to work. Nicholas County, where I am, our standing actually dropped 90 to 97. Length of life, we went to 103rd out of the 120 counties. Quality of life dropped 75 to 89. And health behaviors from 41 to 75. We're an unhealthier group right now. Only 6% of our residents said they had access to the ability to work out for our entire county. So it's going down for my area anyway, not up. So it really is a growing problem that leads to more need for the Medicaid, etc. So looking at this one issue, there are, as you pointed out, many benefits if we can kind of help turn this trend around.
Right, and it's you know, it's a more holistic approach because, you know, to your point, if you don't have the health and fitness part of it, the healthy behaviors, you know, it's really intended to look at the person as a whole. We also recognize that it's not just one agency or one cabinet. Like I said, it's actually going to take pretty much everybody in the state to change the mindset and to change, you know, with the understanding that we're not intending to take anything away. What we really want to do is, if somebody is stuck here and they would benefit from moving over, you know, to this place in their world, how do we get them from point A to point B, and what supports do they need, like transportation, like access to fitness activities? What is it that they need that they're lacking, and how can we engage different agencies in the community to wrap that around that person and those families? So that's, again, and I'm a former classroom teacher, recovering classroom teacher, so my transition into human services happened quite some time ago, but it happened as a result of being a classroom teacher and seeing kind of the results of that. You know, if there's dysfunction in the family or there's lack of access to resources, it really plays out in your classroom, and then you also deal with it at the parent and family level. So, so that's why, you know, I tend to pipe up, you know, when things look like they're getting segmented and not including a larger audience, and say, no, this really takes everybody. For example, we're working with Frisky, Family Resource Youth Service Centers. We've engaged them. They've become a willing partner. They want to provide access to, you know, perhaps assistance for some of the community engagement through some of their offices and providing information and supports for the families. So it's growing, you know, the effort and the support network is growing, but we just need to keep kind of engaging. Like this group, we appreciate the invitation to be here today, so thank you so much.
And we all have a copy of this, so yes. If you wish to make notes as we go through.
It's after, like, the first one. I think I put it in the wrong order, but everyone does have a copy of it.
Wow, that was good.
So at any point, if you have a question, please feel free to stop me. I will run through some of the slides. I have a lot of information on them, but I just want to give you the overview and have a kind of conversation. Again, I won't belabor this, but we all know the challenges. And Tracy, right?
Yes.
You just listed off a whole listing of challenges that are facing Kentucky, but we've got the opioid epidemic wreaking havoc. That's just one of the factors that's really challenging both our health and our workforce and our families. Our overdose deaths this year are actually above 1,400 at this point. And my husband works in retail, and he had a lady in one of the stores overdose in the ladies' room yesterday mm-hmm. afternoon. So I mean, it's everywhere. So that's a big issue. Nationally, we're ranked close to last in many of the areas that we want to be first in, and first where we'd like to be last. Our unemployment rate, poverty rate, and workforce participation rates are all, and wages are all among some of the worst in the country. We are among the worst nationally in a couple of key population health metrics. We are first in the nation for cancer deaths. We are second highest in the rate of smoking among adults. We have about a third of our population who struggle with weight-related health issues, and that is 12th highest rate in the nation. We have about 6.8 infant deaths per 1,000 live births. That's a pretty significant infant mortality. So all of our health metrics they could be better. And we've expanded access to care, but what we haven't done is address how are we helping people access and best use that access to care with the access to the health care. And this just talks a little bit more about those statistics. Again, high poverty and high Medicaid enrollment, we're actually approaching 20% poverty rate in our state. We have about a third of our total population enrolled in Medicaid. Our overall state population is about 5.4 million, and we have about between 1.4 and 1.5 million people enrolled in Medicaid services. The expansion was estimated originally to be around 200,000 people. I think that as of this week, we are at about 470,000 who are at the Medicaid expansion population. We didn't have a long-term financing plan for that growth, and it was bigger than we expected. So one of the big issues facing us is we are projected to spend about $1.2 billion in the next 5 years if things stay exactly the way that they are. And that cost, you know, just to give you an idea of that, again, I'm sure you know this, but for every dollar we spend on expanded Medicaid, it's a dollar we don't have to spend on our traditional Medicaid populations for whom this was created, our age-blind, disabled, pregnant women and children who have a true need because there are needs across the board, but there's a more vulnerable population that we're threatening that coverage for.
It's also money we can't train people with, educate people with.
It is.
It's just money gone.
It is. And so rather than, you know, I know that there was talk of, well, we should just roll back expansion, and that's been considered in other states who expanded, but this administration didn't want to take that approach. So this is the alternative. This is the compromised approach, is how do we provide support so that we gradually transition people off of Medicaid services. They no longer need it. This just gives you an overall idea of how we're doing. Our 2016 health rankings overall, we ranked 45th. I would like to point out that, of course, statistics can mean many different things, and you can interpret them differently, but the 45th actually would be 47 to 48 if we didn't include the bottom two. Lack of health care insurance, we're number 10 in the nation, so we have better access to health insurance than 40 other states. We also are 8th in high school graduation, but that comes with a caveat too, because I think a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, Kentucky actually changed its high school graduation requirements. And
now, which I'm having trouble finding that page.
I think you all may have an earlier version of this presentation.
Okay.
I will email this version to you for sharing with everyone. There are a couple slides that I've updated it with, so you may have the earlier version. I apologize for that.
No problem.
But again, so overall we rank 45th, but that is boosted up just a little bit by some higher numbers. So we've got some opportunities. This is probably my favorite slide because it talks about the top represents clinical care and access to care, the quality of care. About 20% of health outcomes can be attributed to quality, about 30% to actual healthy behaviors, and about 40% of your health outcomes actually are related to your socioeconomic factors. So that access alone can't dramatically improve those health outcomes. And that's where we've opened up access, but we haven't, and recognizing, there are folks who speak up and say, but it hasn't been that long. True, but how long do we want to wait before we start trying to turn it around and change some of those metrics?
Can you go back for a second?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Clinical care access.
Yes.
Got that. Do you have health facilities people can get to?
Right.
I'm sick. I need help. Healthy behaviors. As we said, Nicholas County, 6% of the folks say I can get to a Y or I can get to. We have Jockey Park.
Right.
With roads with no shoulders.
Okay.
If you try to walk there or ride a bike or take a stroller, you are dead. So we have this place, but unless you have a car, you can't get to use it, which is kind of silly, but
It's our reality. Oh, we can also walk down the railroad tracks. That's one safe way to get there. So healthy behaviors, I kind of understand. But what are you talking about with social and economic factors?
Social and economic factors are your income level, your employment, your connectedness to the community. What are you involved in as far as, you know, your friend network, your support network? It also includes, you know, activities such as involvement in a church group, in some sort of a social group. So, but it's primarily your income, your employment, and your social connectedness. So it's that support that you have.
So again, in today, mm-hmm. where all of us have our phones buzzing, etc., and our kids all sit around like this, we're connected to that. We're cannot, you know, I've seen kids text other kids
different
in the same
room. Right.
So not having that social connectedness or being part of that problem is the technology is impacting in a way maybe we hadn't seen before, but our kids are growing up with.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And that's a connectedness, and that might be called social connectedness, but this is social and economic factors that are actually engaging with people in your community.
Yeah, just because I want to make sure, Trace, I understand where you were going with that. So I think what we're talking about is, hey, they're not engaging within the community. Forget about cell phone, because the engagement requires that you're out of the house doing something, right?
Getting involved in a group, or right. going and helping a friend, or
right.
sitting around the house on the cell phone connected to.
Now, I think the cell phone would get you into the unhealthy behavior side yes. of things.
On many levels.
It very easily can. Now, we hope to use the cell phones as a tool to help get people out of that, because we do intend to, as much as we possibly can, and Kelly can speak to this, use mobile.
As an enabler.
Yes, yeah. as a facilitator.
Yeah. Okay.
As a mobile, you know, technology that can be used to, you know, look up community engagement hours. You know, we're hoping that we'll be able to have, when you pull up your community engagement, whatever it's called, that it shows you five opportunities in your right. area where there's an event going on.
Or if we could bring back Pokemon Go every year. I remember my kids going, I was out there and I met all these people and I was in this park I'd never been to and I found that park I'd never been to and we had that's it. There's the solution.
Well, now we got the rock thing.
And the rock thing.
The rural
but
areas.
Using the...
What is it called?
County.
I'm not sure what it's called.
What's
people
the rock
got rocks.
It's something
you
about
rocks and hide them and leave clues
yes.
because they're doing it as.
Oh, is that where you're using the yes. GPS to go around and all that?
No,
that's
no,
geocaching.
Yeah,
that's
clues
different.
And ever it's really big
it's,
right
it's
now.
Like the rural Pokemon Go.
Yeah, 10% in.
Go find this rock somewhere.
But the idea being that it's using a technology and
okay,
mobile phone.
I was just wondering.
It's been a lot of time.
Our kids will engage. If we can come up with the right things, they will engage.
That's a really good point because I think as your population ages, the younger groups that maybe are on these generational cycles are going to be more apt to do that. Yeah, I agree with that.
So using that technology, if we can come up with cool ways or we need to go capture some kids who are Pokemon kids and bring them in here to consult with us.
Yes.
On what we can do to. Are you one of those Pokemon kids? We'll take
no, I put an end to it. I got tired of driving around town with that thing. The only problem with something like the Pokemon Go is your smaller counties, there's almost none to catch.
Also, no cell service.
Yeah, no cell service because they were just, and I know it sounds funny, but they were just catching the low level things and my bunch lost interest quickly.
Yeah, we might have to do painted rocks and go pick up a printed sheet.
It was.
Go do it.
They're doing it because they leave clues and take pictures.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
Well, and there's another thing, and I don't mean to digress too much, called letterboxing, which it originates from a long time ago. This is a little more old-fashioned version of geocaching, but people plant ink pads and stamps and clues, and you can actually print directions off. You know, it's online, but I think they begrudgingly went online. I'm not sure where they kept it before, but you can actually go find these ink pads and you take your journal and you stamp the ink pad and then you have a record of where you've been and these people are from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Have you
oh,
heard
wow.
of this?
Cool.
Okay. It's letterboxing.org
good.
And you can find that.
This is again what we're trying to do is out of the box
yes.
thinking low tech, high tech.
Yes.
And if we can get that conversation started and then start sharing it with some of the other areas.
Right.
This is how we're going to come up with some ideas.
And it's going to be different for every community. And that's the thing, is that this can't be a one-size-fits-all. Mm-hmm. We can't say, okay, everybody's going to have Pokemon Go on their phones, and that's going to be the solution. That's not
So that's the other reason why we wanted to engage. It became real clear to us that we needed to engage the local workforce boards to help us kind of facilitate the community engagement, because the ultimate outcome, you know, is to have that job at some point. But people may not start out there. You know, we have about 60% of our expanded population has an 11th grade level, education level or lower. So their first stop may be adult ed. You know, that may be the first stop for a lot of people as part of kind of their progression. But, or they may not want that. And there may be some sort of occupational trade program that they can go into, but something. And there's lots of funded programs out there that are just not being accessed. And so bringing that all together so people have that in their local communities and have access to.
Right. There's an information overload.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many programs and so many things, and I keep hearing about them every day and sharing, oh, good, I didn't know about that.
Right.
And even within our groups that handle these kind of things. So the database and what would fit and collecting, and as you said, everybody being able to access.
Right.
Will be a good thing.
So that is the goal, is to have that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, absolutely. And the other 10%, because it adds up to 90%, I don't know what that other 10% is. I stole this slide from another group and have been using it, but my guess would be it's probably genetic factors, predisposition for health, but I will find that out, what the other 10% is. This is just kind of the 1, 2, 3 intent of the Kentucky Health Program. The first is just the point that the current Medicaid expansion hasn't improved any of the health metrics that we're tracking. We're still seeing the same rankings, and in some cases, they're getting worse. The second point is Kentucky Health is intended to get members involved in their health care, including understanding, you know, what the cost of care is, because right now there's not an understanding of that, and eventually we're hoping people will get out into the commercial private insurance market. Increase job opportunities and practice healthy living, promote healthy living. The third point is to help stabilize the high cost of providing Medicaid services to our most needy populations and really preserving the traditional Medicaid. So it is seeking, it's a holistic solution, intends to be a holistic solution to improve health. This is just a very high level. This is what the vision is, to re-envision this program not as a long-term plan, but a safety net, and improve health by incentivizing positive health choices, and I'll talk a little bit more about how we propose to do that, transforming members into active participants who are more engaged in their health, and requiring individuals to participate in those community engagement activities, again, with the point of not just helping them improve their circumstances, if that's a possibility, but also to just have them out and engaged in something that they find meaningful. The benefits, again, lots of benefits, but we're highlighting just a few here. Giving members more control over their health care. There are a couple of personal kind of health spending accounts that we've incorporated that give them some control. Promoting health and self-sufficiency by encouraging that engagement. Creating opportunities to promote healthy living and being involved in that health care, and then implementing that more financially sustainable approach. This, I apologize, because I know this slide is very hard to see. You should have this in the version you have. It's a side-by-side chart, but it may be hard to see on that also. The main point in this chart is to tell you who is not included in Kentucky Health and who is included. On the left side, these are Medicaid populations who are not impacted. They will have no impact whatsoever on their Medicaid benefits from Kentucky Health. And it's our home and community-based waivers, the 1915C, you may have heard them called, but it's the Michelle P. waiver, it's the autism waiver, it's all the different waivers that are 1915C is just a provision of Medicaid that they fall under. They will have no change. That includes our nursing facility residents. Medicare doesn't fall into this at all, but we get asked that a lot. You know, this is, how does this affect my Medicare? It does not. This is Medicaid. Our acquired brain injury members, so all of those protected Medicaid populations, our traditional Medicaid populations, don't have any impact. Benefits stay the same. On the right-hand side, those populations who are included include our traditional Medicaid adults who were eligible before expansion. Those would be kind of our parent caregivers, our low-income families who were eligible before expansion. Our Medicaid expansion adults, our pregnant women and children, our traditional Medicaid and our K-CHIP program, and our medically frail adults, any adults who are determined to be medically frail. Their benefits differ slightly
while they're part of Kentucky Health, they have slight differences to their benefits. But you will see that, for example, pregnant women and children, there's not any community engagement required. For our medically frail adults, they also do not have a community engagement requirement. That community engagement requirement is primarily focused for our traditional adults who are parent caregivers, as long as they are not the primary caregiver. They might be the spouse or significant other. Then there would be a community engagement requirement. And our Medicaid expansion adults, they would have a premium or a copay. They have a plan that's like the state employee benefit plan. And they have vision and dental available through My Rewards account, like a health spending account. They also have a community engagement requirement. So the biggest change is to our Medicaid expansion adults. And that's kind of what we focus on when we go through the program components to show you what is changing for that population.
But you said that's the 450,000 we thought was
that is to... That is the 400. It's actually up to 470,000. So that's the expansion population is about 470,000 at this point. If the community engagement would not necessarily apply to all of those because you're going to have your primary caregivers, your medically frail, and your pregnant women.
Right.
So when you back those out, the community engagement population comes out to be about 220,000, I think, is where we landed. That's the number we typically give out. But that changes all the time. So again, a lot of information, and I don't mean to go too fast, but I know that you guys have a lot to talk about today, so we'll keep moving. This just shows you benefit overview. If someone is in Kentucky Health, there are really kind of two different plans they could have in Kentucky Health. The first one is just the complete Kentucky Health Alternative Benefit Plan. This is the one that's modeled after the Kentucky State Employee Benefits. So they have the same benefits and limitations. For example, I have the Kentucky State Employee Plan. I do not have vision or dental as part of my health insurance, but I put money in a health spending account that I can use for my vision and dental. So this is modeled after that. They would have the health insurance. They would have vision and dental access through a My Rewards account, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then they also have added to their My Rewards account gym membership and fitness activities. We recognize that not everybody has a gym. They can't get to a gym, so we're trying to come up with creative ways, open to suggestions. Please let us know what you think about different fitness activities that could be covered, and they could use their My Rewards account. And the My Rewards account, there's ways they can earn virtual dollars to spend on vision, dental, and fitness. The other part, this would be your medically frail, your pregnant women, and your children. They are also in Kentucky Health, but they have the Medicaid state plan, which is current benefits, and it includes our medically frail, and there's no change in their benefits. They continue to get their vision and their dental through their MCO, their managed care organization. So,
can I ask, the way to gain virtual dollars, are they going to have to go online to do those activities?
That's an option. But there are lots of different ways, and that list is still being developed, that whole kind of contingency of all these different activities that they could use.
Think of all the people that just don't have internet access
at all. Well, there are, for example, we've had this conversation a lot, coming up with creative ways that people could have My Rewards activities in their communities if they don't have good internet access or maybe they don't have it personally. There are a number of different ways that we've come up with so far, but it's not limited. I mean, Frisky suggested two other possibilities, and it was come to parent-teacher conferences. And we thought, that's a great idea because that's good for the child, it's good for the family, it's good for the teacher. My Rewards all day long. So it's an ever-developing list. We've asked for flexibility from the federal government really around the My Rewards program because we want to make sure that we have the ability to change and, what's working, what's not working.
Has that engaged libraries too?
Not directly, but...
The libraries have started, they did a daddy-daughter, how to do your hair. They're going to do a cooking, basics thing.
Right.
So they're getting more that our rural community, we had a meeting of our 20s and 30s group. We're putting together a 5, 10, 15-year plan for our county. And some of those 20s and 30s dads said they went. And 10 dads showed up. They had a ball with it.
Yeah.
But it's getting them out. It's getting them into the library. It's adult education is right under the library.
Right.
So the libraries might be something to look to and add. Because they do have a lot of programs that people go to on a weekly basis.
Well, and they wouldn't necessarily have to be added specifically, but that would be a really good example of an event, a community event that they attended that counts as either community engagement or for My Rewards.
But this is their program?
Yep.
And in our rural community where we don't have good internet, after school, all of our 12 or whatever computers are booked.
Right.
We're looking at adding a community center to give more internet access, and after, it's till 5 o'clock. We close at 5. Absolutely.
So this, going back to your question, not to extend the discussion too far, but access, when you say, well, a lot of people don't have internet access, I'll tell you the story real quick. I went down to Eastern Kentucky. I spent a lot of time in Eastern Kentucky because that's big problems down there, right? And I heard about this, hey, you won't get cell phone coverage and all this stuff. I didn't experience that. Drove into Hazard, drove into Harlan, drove into Bell County, Middlesboro, all those different places. Was using Waze the whole way, because if I lost Waze, I would have been lost down there, and they'd still be looking for me, right? So I get down there, and I'm working with one of the caseworkers, and this woman comes in. She's 18 years old, and she's got a cell phone, and she's texting on it the whole time. And then I finally ask her, hey, is that a smartphone? And she says yes. So she knows what the terms. She's 18 years old. She's got a child, 1 year old. And I says, a smartphone. She knows what a smartphone is, right? And I said, so you have access to the internet? She said, yeah. And I said, do you have a plan for a data plan for it? She says, I go to Walmart each month, sure, and I pay $45 for Straight Talk. I have a feeling that even if they didn't have a laptop at home, they still got internet access on the cell phones. And then to Tracy's point, even if they didn't have that, the libraries are a source for maybe connecting to be able to do some of the stuff that we're talking about.
I guess where I thought of, my family's from Northern Kentucky, Gallatin County. My dad can't get internet where he lives. He doesn't have a cell phone where he lives. The only way for him to get internet is to either go into work or go into the library. And their library is the community. It's their community center. It's their main point of contact for everything. They've had to add 3 rooms because every night they have all 3 rooms booked.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where I was thinking. I mean,
I'm
familiar with Eastern Kentucky as well, but I know that Western Kentucky and Northern Kentucky don't have
awesome. That's why I'm asking, because I'm trying to get it in my head,
right,
from a demographic standpoint. Hey, what does it look like across the state? Because I didn't really experience that down in Eastern Kentucky, but...
You've been to Western Kentucky?
And I have been, but not enough. But I will say this. I'm talking about a younger group.
Mm-hmm.
There is a little bit of difference there. They won't give that up.
Right.
It's like your point about... Hey,
but
I want
there,
to go to
there
text.
Are limits. I had a young man. He just had his 5th child, 30. Real hard worker. But he was doing work at my house. And his plan would run out of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be able to still text. He probably had run out of his data already and had to wait till he got his next paycheck to get it back. Now, I'm trying to say, are you coming tomorrow? And he's going, my cell phone's dead. I'm so sorry I couldn't show up. I wanted to. I'm really ready to work. $15 an hour is a lot of work money for me. I have now 5 children, but my plan ran out. And so... Even though we're talking about this, we have to look at the specifics of
right.
it,
right.
And how much education can I get off of that, or how much checking in? I may be able to still text, or it's cut off mid-month. So,
yeah, okay, good point. I always like to get that context when I go to the different
mm-hmm.
areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you guys seeing
for Hazard? I was just spent 2 weeks down there. Myself and another instructor stayed in a motel. On the hill, he could communicate with me. Went to the motel, he had 0 service.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So what is your provider?
Verizon.
That's Verizon. I found I have coverage. My brother doesn't at his house.
What's your provider?
AT&T.
I've got Verizon, but I'm not sure what he had.
I have AT&T and don't get service in Hazard when I went
yeah.
there.
Okay, it's interesting. So those are just things we got to be
mm-hmm.
cognizant
enough. Because
yeah.
we can't say, oh, I've got a friend who has it, and assume that everybody
right.
does.
Right.
So some of the specifics of the technology will be good. And getting some of the cell phone providers
mm-hmm.
involved.
That's actually what I was gathering from this, is we need to engage some of the cell phone providers and see what we can do to encourage some discussion about how can we help with this particular need.
Are you envisioning that they'll have an account set up for themselves and they will need to have online access to log in their hours that they're spending, like the Frisky meeting that they go to?
That will be an option. It's also, you know, obviously it'll be an option to mail in anything, you know, the participation form if that needs to be mailed in. We're trying to steer away from that, but we understand that there are limitations. I mean, there really are limitations to technology. I I didn't have cell service in Hazard when I went there. So, and I have Verizon.
Do you have
Verizon? Yes.
Do you really?
Yes. So, you know, the inconsistencies.
Okay, I get that.
Thank you. There's no pattern there. But just, you know, there's the Frisky offices have said, the coordinators have said that they would like to be a location that can help with logging that in, you know, with doing that sort of information. So really just kind of depending on where you are, again, putting together the library, the school, the different areas, the DCBS office, if there's one that they can get to, different opportunities, places where people can go to either log in to look at community engagement opportunities, or they can log their hours.
And to give kudos to Frisky, again, you have to understand, my county is 7,000 people. My city is 2,000 people. So we're like the blip that we're not going to get much attention, which is why we're working regionally. We were told it's the only way we're going to get any attention on anything. But our Frisky coordinator has put together phenomenal programs in my little area. She doesn't sleep. She's phenomenal. And our AmeriCorps is another great group. Community Action for Us is why I invited Malcolm to come. For some reason, he wasn't able to attend. Has been a huge, really moving the needle, getting things done, and interacting with a lot of the people that we're talking about, because it's a large part of our population.
Right. And, you know, our big thing is we don't want to create anything new. We want to leverage what's already in place and just get people talking more about how can we problem solve for, you know, the lack of connectivity in Gallatin? You know, how could we resolve that? You know, we don't want to build anything that's already there. We just want to pull it all together if we can.
This is just a different way of showing, you know, how the benefits apply to different groups. The adult group is the adult expansion group. For our adult group that is not medically frail or not pregnant, they have the Kentucky Health Alternative Benefit Plan. That's the state employees model. For all other Medicaid groups who are in Kentucky Health, they all have the no change in benefits, so they have that Medicaid state plan that still includes the vision, the dental, with their MCO. This is just a snapshot of the key components of Kentucky Health, and I'm going to give a brief definition of each one. The slides after this get into more detail, but, you know, again, I think we want to talk a little more high level about the plan for SNAP and then the plan for community engagement and how that impacts you all, or could. The cost sharing is really, this is an intentional way of introducing people to more commercial market practices, like a monthly premium. The Kentucky Health will default to a monthly premium plan instead of a copay plan. Right now, Medicaid has copays. So every time you go to the doctor, every time you go to the pharmacy, there's a copay associated with that. So it's kind of tough to predict what your healthcare budget needs to be. The monthly premiums will range from $1 to $15 for family coverage, and it's a set monthly amount. If you're paying your monthly premium, there are no copays. So that's intended to be more budget stable. And it gets away from the how many copays in a month, and copays don't typically get collected, just to be honest. You know, the providers don't mess with it, the MCOs don't mess with it, and so we're hoping that moving to a premium monthly set amount will, first of all, get people ready for, if they get employer-sponsored insurance, you pay a monthly premium, but secondly, will help them be able to have that set monthly healthcare cost. Premium assistance, this is a program that the state will pay the premium for someone who has the option to enroll in their employer's insurance. So if it's cost effective for the person to take the employer insurance rather than remain in Medicaid, the state will pay the premium. And then for any services that are not provided by the employer insurance that would be covered under Medicaid, the state will then wrap around benefits to make sure they have equal benefits. Education and training. These are health and financial literacy classes to teach different health, chronic disease management. There's a whole litany of things that could fall into this category. Financial literacy is intended to be a number of different things. For example, there could be just a basic budgeting. There could be, you know, learning about setting up a checking account, all the way up to learning about mortgages. And so there will be a number of different financial literacy classes too. The PATH program, this is our kind of internal acronym that we've created that the DCBS and the workforce boards will know. PATH stands for Partnership to Advance Training in Health. That's community engagement, basically. And so that is the volunteer work, public service, employment,
training, you know, caregiving can qualify for community engagement, but PATH is Partnership to Advance Training in Health. The My Rewards account, that is the health spending account where the vision and dental and fitness activities have been moved to. It is a virtual dollar account, so when people earn dollars through My Rewards activities, it gets credited to an account that is going to be run through our claims system that we have right now for Medicaid. They will be able to take that account and go to the dentist, go to the optometrist, go to the, you know, gym membership, yoga classes, Zumba. You know, if there's Zumba offered at your school, you can go to your Zumba classes, whatever it is. That's intended to be paid out of My Rewards account, and people can earn dollars into that account. And I'll talk about how. Deductible account. This is different from what you and I understand as a deductible account. The state pays for this deductible account. The individual does not. It's basically a $1,000 state-funded account that is part of the rate paid to the managed care organization that sits in the individual's account. Again, the purpose is to start sharing kind of cost of care concepts so people have an understanding of what their care costs. They will get a monthly statement that shows from that $1,000 what's been deducted for their services. Doesn't apply to preventive services. It's only additional services beyond their prevention activities. So again, these go into much more detail. Do you all have these as part of your
presentation? Yes.
Okay, so I'll just very quickly run through these. Again, the cost sharing, everybody in Kentucky Health is going to default to the premium assistant, or the premium payment, which is $1 to $15 per month. That's for family coverage, depending on family income. And again, this is for the 100% of federal poverty level up to 138%. It's also below 100%. If they're below 100% of the federal poverty level, it's adjusted according to where they fall in that income range.
What is the income level for that then right now in Kentucky?
For the top range is 130%, 138% of the federal poverty level. And then the actual cost sharing breakdown, and I have this somewhere, I can put the chart up later if you'd like, shows the chart of what income level. I think it's 0 to 25 is $1, 25 to 50 is $3, but there's a breakdown of $1 to $15, and $15 is for that top income level up to 138%.
I'm wondering if that's an annual income of like $16,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 or
$50,000. I believe it's $24,000 for a family of...
It's like $24,500.
For a family of three. I was going to say, there's probably people in the room who know it right off the top of their heads.
That gives us a kind of a gauge.
Yes.
How will they pay the premiums?
To the MCOs.
Directly to them?
Directly to the managed care organizations. There will be an online option. They can pay by check. They can pay however they pay it. And the managed care organizations have been partnering with us from the very beginning, so they're already on board. They know they'll be collecting these. There are different non-payment penalties, but I do want to point out for every time that there's a penalty and somebody could be suspended from their benefits, there's also a way for them to get unsuspended. So, you know, we've tried really hard to build in those safeguards so that there's an on-ramp where there's an off-ramp. If they're over 100% of the federal poverty level and they do not pay their premium, they can be disenrolled or suspended from their benefits. But that takes, there's a 60-day period within which they have to make that first payment or to make a payment, and then they have another 30 days before they're actually suspended. So there's quite a lead-in time and a lot of communication planned to make sure that that doesn't happen to the extent possible. If they're at or below 100% of the federal poverty level, they do not lose coverage. They would change to the copay plan. So they would come out of the premium payment and they would go to the copay plan, so every time they went to the doctor, there would be a copayment. So they would lose the benefit of having that set monthly amount. Again, you know, the hope is to change behavior and get people more used to making that monthly payment for their medical care. This just gives a little bit more information about premium plan, copay plan. Cost share exempt is what I want to point out. Our medically frail individuals, our pregnant women, and our children do not have any cost sharing. They don't pay premiums. They don't pay copayments. So it's only for our expansion adult and parent caregivers who have that premium plan or the copayment plan. Again, this deductible account is a $1,000 state-funded account. It is to pay for the first $1,000 of their expenses except for preventive services. And the incentive here, they will be given cost of care comparisons between different providers.
it doesn't vary too much between Medicaid providers, but you might have one service $50 and one service $55. At the end of their benefit year, they can transfer up to half of that deductible account into their My Rewards account. So it's virtual money when it's the deductible account, but it becomes money they can actually use for vision, dental, and fitness if they transfer a balance at the end of their benefit year. The community engagement and employment, we've already talked about it, you know, pretty well, but what I would like to point out is the box at the bottom, not impacted, are children, pregnant women, are medically frail, chronically homeless. We've included in the category of not being required to do that community engagement. If you're a primary caregiver of a dependent, and that's either that dependent child, but it also could be a disabled adult child. Full-time students, those who are already employed full-time, and those who are already meeting SNAP and TANF work or education requirements are already meeting community engagement. So we had a lot of questions at the beginning of, well, I'm already working full-time, do I have to go do another 20 hours to keep my Medicaid? The answer is no. If you're already meeting that employment requirement, you're already meeting community engagement.
You know what percent that is?
I'm sorry?
You know what percent that is?
About 50% are already either working or they're in some sort of school or volunteer capacity. Education and training, again, these are health and financial literacy and chronic disease management classes. They can earn dollars into their My Rewards account through these classes. They can also meet community engagement requirements. And there are specific classes that we're hoping to design that help them get out of a suspension period, like a financial literacy course to get out of a suspension period from not paying premiums, just to kind of go over monthly budgeting principles, or it hasn't been designed yet, but that is the idea. It's in process. The Commonwealth, you know, there will be a process for identifying curriculum and approving providers. Again, we know that there's a lot of this out there already. We don't want to reinvent it. You know, we're not going to sit in our offices and design these courses. It's the public health departments, the managed care organizations, what's already out there, and how can we bring it into a...
For getting work ready certification, I know that didn't the ad district put together some of the soft skills and financial planning and those kind of things?
All those things would be things that would qualify for
that
these.
Have already been developed.
Right.
And to be a work-ready community, we've already talked about and implemented. So again, not to reinvent the wheel, but to expand who gets it, you know, because we have people in our community and shop owners that say they come in and they don't know how to write a check. Today, you know, people who do have jobs and work in the whole nine yards and don't have, like that young man had to go to the liquor store to cash the check I gave him. He does not have a bank account.
Right.
And the local bank would not cash a check if it's not from their local bank. So he paid a 10% premium on top of it.
That's part of a cycle, you know, that when you have people who don't have the bank account, that, you know, they have to pay fees, and so there's that's another whole topic altogether. I'll touch on that briefly, but that's kind of a part of what we're trying to build into this foundational training that we want for our workforce partners, for whomever really wants it. For the most part, is that it's Bridges Out of Poverty. I'm sure you've probably heard of it, but it's really Bridges. It's a poverty awareness training. You know, it's kind of an idea of if you haven't been in that situation, you may not understand what people do, the decisions that have to be made when there are scarce resources. So, you know, not everybody thinks about that when you're an employer or a teacher, and it's really kind of spreading that information so that people have a different understanding. To your point, when somebody has to pay $10 to cash a check, that's $10 they don't have, or 10%. That's 10% of income they don't have right off the top. So those are different considerations. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry to interrupt again.
No, you're fine.
How do the premiums and deductibles and all that affect emergency care services?
Meaning?
Like if they go to the emergency room, because I know sometimes people, instead of going to their primary care doctor and having to pay their bill, they go to the ER.
Right. So we have incentives for people to not use the ER except under the right circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
There's a My Rewards credit at the end of a benefit year if they haven't had any, you know, inappropriate use of the emergency room.
There's also a deduction from the My Rewards account for inappropriate use of that emergency room, and that's all based on diagnosis codes. So that's kind of being built into the system. Plus, there's an incentive payment to that My Rewards account for having a follow-up visit with your primary care, whoever that primary care physician is. They get a payment for that, too, for making sure they do that follow-up visit, because that's one of the places where we're really missing the mark. They'll go to the emergency room, and then they won't have any follow-up care, and so they end up back at the emergency room. So, you know, we are, and suggestions, if you all see things and trends that you think should be part of this, you know, we are, again, looking for other ideas that we certainly don't pretend to know all what we need to know to do this. The premium assistance, again, this is the state pays for the individual's premium, insurance premium, if they have access to employer-sponsored insurance. It's optional enrollment for the first year of Kentucky Health, and we plan to change benefits in July of 2018, so until July of 2019, it would only be optional. But at that one-year mark, then it will become mandatory, because the whole point is if you have access to employer-sponsored insurance and it's more cost-effective, that's the route we want you to go. We actually had employers when expansion happened, and I won't name any, but you probably know who some of them are. We had employers encouraging their employees to enroll in Medicaid because their wage level was at the point where they qualified, and it saved the businesses money because they were no longer part of their insurance. So this is trying to reverse that trend. And then the My Rewards account, again, it's health, it's job training, it's community engagement. There are all different ways that people can earn virtual dollars into that My Rewards account. The account's available to members who are active. They can't be in a suspension. They can use the My Rewards for vision and dental and for vision and fitness benefits. For gym and fitness benefits. It is available to our medically frail individuals and our pregnant women. They can use that My Rewards account for fitness activities. They don't have to. They could opt to pay the premium and have access to My Rewards. It is not available to our children or our non-Kentucky Health, our traditional Medicaid populations like our nursing facility people.
Could they add to the My Rewards account that they could do really great and change it into cash that could be used to pay for education and tuition and things of that nature?
We actually have, and the federal government doesn't like us very much right now because, well, I won't say that. We're challenging them a lot on these. We've asked them to reimburse for the health and financial literacy classes and for GED classes and training. So they would be the payer of last resort for training classes, but we have asked for Medicaid to fund it because we view that as a supporting healthy living. You know, it's a long-term health.
So if I have to, you know, pay for something, in other words, we might be able to expand that where I could use My Rewards cash to pay for classes?
We haven't gotten it to the My Rewards part yet, but we've just asked for them to straight fund it.
Okay.
So that it doesn't even have to come out of the My Rewards class. But that is something that we're looking at, is could we also use it, could we also have them use it for example, for non-emergency transportation, for other education classes that they don't have funding for. So we're looking at other ways that we can expand it. We're not quite there yet. That might be kind of a phase two, but it's certainly an idea worth exploring. These are just examples of My Rewards activities that could earn virtual dollars. And the My Rewards account, I'm sorry, what I wanted to say about changing it into real dollars, if somebody exits Medicaid services, they've gotten a job, they have insurance, they can use their employer's insurance. If they stay off of the Medicaid services plan for 18 months, whatever the balance of their My Rewards account was, up to $500, they get paid out. So they will actually get that money paid to them in cash. And so that's another incentive, is you've been off for a year and a half, you've had your insurance, and you get that payment. So that's, we're also looking at, is there a way that we can make that payment earlier so that it's more of a kind of a transition payment? But those are all thoughts.
Sure, or even a third, a third, a third.
Right, so that it's, you've got a consistent installment to kind of
six months,
that
a year,
transition.
Year and a half. Yeah.
Right. Examples of activities include education and training. If you go complete your health risk assessment with your managed care company, you get My Rewards. And we didn't put the dollar amounts on here,
But just to give you an example, they range from anywhere from $10 to $150 being the top ticket item. And that $150 is to register with a career center and complete your goals and your needs assessment. So we really want to emphasize
that. One's that how much?
$150.
Credit.
Preventive screenings, getting your annual physical, getting your child to the doctor for their annual physical will pay rewards to your My Rewards account. Taking your child for a dental exam, doing a vision exam, you know, all those prevention services, we really, really want to emphasize preventive services. So making sure that, and we're adding to this list every time we present to a group, they're like, well, what about this? And what about this? And we add it to the slide. We're like, that's great. Let's add that. We added, I think, oral health and periodontal disease after a meeting with the dentist last week. So if you think of something and it qualifies as some other activity, let's add it. Community engagement. So job search activities, passing the GED exam, registering with the Career Center, completing a job skills training course, all of those would be My Rewards dollars. And then healthy living, smoking cessation activities, alcohol counseling, addiction counseling, completing the First Step program with public health, all of these things, avoiding inappropriate emergency room visits, and following up with your primary care. Those are all qualifying My Rewards activities. And again, this is just a partial list. The whole list is about a page long, growing by the day. You know, we're adding the parent conferences to that mix. Just any ideas that you have, we're certainly eager to hear them.
And are those operational now, or this is building to go into effect?
It's building to go into effect, and you're really good. I need you at all of my presentations because you lead me to the next slide every time. It's like perfect timing. So this is our timeline. Again, it may be a little hard to see. I don't know if you have this in your packet. Phase one is January 1st, 2018. Phase one only consists of notifying people that changes are coming. Hey, you may qualify for Kentucky Health. These changes are coming in July. Stay tuned. But it also includes people will be able to start earning My Rewards dollars before benefits ever change by getting their preventive activities done.
So this is 3 months away.
It is.
Has anybody heard about this on the radio or TV or anything?
No, and you won't.
We're just going to sneak it in there.
We are not going to sneak it in, I can promise you that. We've had this very delicate balance that we've had to strike. Because we don't have approval yet, we haven't really been able to get out there and say, this is what we're doing and this is when the changes are happening. But we are getting out more now. At this point, we're having stakeholder group meetings. We're presenting this information. We're telling people in January, you're going to get a notification. So nothing changes to benefits in January. But people will have the ability to go get their physical, go get their mammogram, go get preventive dental screen, you know, whatever the prevention services are. Those will start counting for My Rewards starting January 1st.
Right, this coming January.
This coming January.
So my question is, who are you telling about this? And how are you telling about this?
We are telling managed care organizations. We are working with DCBS and Medicaid frontline staff. We're working with Frisky. We haven't started the Big Bang communications yet. We've started with stakeholder groups, and so this is gradually happening. But we will. Our managed care organizations are going to help us notify people that as of January 1st, any of your preventive exams will count for My Rewards. And we're also going to have member information available at DCBS offices. You know, we have a very long communications plan that it involves all the state agencies, public health. We've got a whole team working on the communications, but primarily we think that our managed care organizations will be able to get this information out because they talk with our members all the time. So.
Okay, because the people that we go to for help, if you now hit that, there are constantly people coming available or becoming eligible.
Right.
So for our communities, mm-hmm. the smaller ones, to be more aware, Frisky is a great way to do it.
Yes.
Community Action is a great way to do it.
Right.
But then taking it out to the general public who may know someone who's just struggling and hasn't gone for help.
Right.
I'm thinking of adding the libraries.
Yes.
And I know we have a problem that we put it in the paper, but one out of six houses gets the paper. We can put it on our local radio station, but not everybody listens to that.
Right.
And you can put it on TV, but on what? I mean, it's so fragmented as to where we go and to get it across. So just wondering what the plan is there.
Well, and the plan is we have a whole
group of materials that we have just about ready to send out, and we'll send it to anybody we can think of and anybody who wants it and who will help share it. But it includes the timeline and kind of what's happening at different points in the year in 2018. It's frequently asked questions. It's kind of your bulleted talking points if you get asked questions about how are my benefits changing. So we have FAQs. We've got timelines. We have graphics. We have an actual flyer that is going to go out to members. And we do have, I forgot to mention this, we have a series of postcards that will be mailed out. So those will be mailed out to people. Not everybody looks at their mail. They might look at it and toss it. So we're having to approach it from a lot of different ways.
Now, our partners, Workforce Investment Board, et cetera, Bluegrass Ed, local elected officials,
yes.
Our county judges are front line, and I know our judges out all the time. You need something, call me. And people just do. I mean, I call like, do you know somebody who can unplug my toilet? Do you know somebody who can, because I'm new to the community. I don't have that network. And so the judges and the mayors,
yes,
are they included in that?
They are. We've met with them twice already, and we're working through the Department for Local Government. We're actually presenting at the Local Issues Conference tomorrow the same information, but also having a question and answer session with the locals. But we plan to have more follow-ups with them at the local level and at the state level.
And when it comes to our employers, mm-hmm. I'm president of our local chamber. I've never heard anything, been approached, had anything sent. And even our small, tiny little towns and cities like Carlisle have an all-volunteer, but we have a chamber.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if that can also be added?
The chambers are on the list. I don't think the outreach has started with them yet. But again, the Department for Local Governments, they are kind of our go-to, and they're helping coordinate reaching out to the local chambers, the local officials, and they're helping pull that part of it together.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah. But we may miss something, so please, you know, don't
worry. I'm going to be watching for it now.
Yeah.
I'm putting it on my calendar today.
We're going to put you down for first. So so January 2018 is really just kind of the notification, hey, this is coming, and preventive services, you can already get my rewards. April 1st, no intention for April Fool's Day, but April 1st, we will have the online, the system will be able to track education and training classes. Those will start to be available. It won't be the full group, but we'll have the first ones of those available online and also in person and through whatever medium we can, whatever delivery system. They will still be able to earn preventive services dollars. And then July 1st is kind of the big bang. This is when the benefits change from the traditional Medicaid over to Kentucky Health for those who are eligible for it. And the system comes online. The community engagement tracking starts. It does not start across the state, and this is where I kind of want to shift that conversation to how are we rolling out community engagement and how does the SNAP employment and training fit into all this. But community engagement will be a phased-in approach. It's intended to be by workforce area, and it's not intended to roll out until everybody who's involved in that community agrees that we are ready for community engagement to start in our community. So again, it's not we flip a switch and everybody has community engagement requirements July 1st. You know, Kelly, I don't know if you want to speak to that. Some of the work that you've been doing with the local boards and with DCBS is really to assess kind of their flow.
Yeah. So the DCBS does a pretty good job. Are you talking about from a SNAP perspective specifically? Or
what is a DCBS?
Department for Community-Based Services. I apologize. Usually,
so it's where people usually go for the SNAP eligibility or TANF or whatever. But,
got it. Okay, super.
One of the things that I saw was that DCBS does a really good job when it comes to eligibility. It's the follow-through on the workforce and development side that they have. They have some employment and training aspects that are associated with SNAP. It makes a lot of sense for it to be under the workforce side because that's what you guys specialize in. So one of the things we've talked about is we need a warm handoff. So in other words, they come in for the eligibility, they get approval, and then that information is sent on to the workforce side. The workforce says, all right, we know about this particular individual, and oh, by the way, they've already auto-scheduled an appointment for the career center, and they show up on that particular date, meet with the career coach, and our thought process is that the whole register process, the eligibility and all that would be done automatically based on data we've already gathered, or eligibility based on what information we have that can determine which programs they're eligible for. Career coach is still going to make the determination of which program they're going into.
And the fly in the ointment is our folks can't get to, and we've shut down a number in our particular ed district of our career centers. So even though the guys are doing a great job and offering a lot, if you can get there, we can't get there. Can we take this to community action or the library or the school or someplace?
Absolutely. So one of the things we're talking about is a self-service portal. Okay, so we'll give them access to that. And yes, we would probably engage the libraries. And I don't know about community action, but I wrote notes. I definitely want to talk to you about
that
at some point.
They're doing career counseling, helping with resumes. They're looking for jobs and connecting. And they've changed their focus to say, it's a hand up, not a hand out.
Right.
You want to be part of our program. You take our courses. You do the financial. You come to parent-teacher. Or your kids can't be in our pre-Head Start program.
Right.
Yeah.
So they, in our particular community, and it may not be the same in others, some of the library may be, you know, the real go-getter, but community and county to county, I think our judges can help identify. But then, as you said, how do you get the systems to talk to one another and hand off? And
Kelly, not to put you on the spot, but you talked about meetings with the local offices, DCBS, and the local elected officials and the WIBs. I'm assuming that you're still working your way across the state, because I'm not aware of any of those meetings that have taken. I know the WIB and the LEOs haven't.
Yeah, the meetings I've mostly had have been with the directors. Like I did one not too long ago in E-Town that included Bluegrass, Lincoln Trail, and Cumberland's, I think, was in there too.
Okay.
And we talked about
That's the one Amy went to.
Yeah, Amy and them were there. And we talked about the workflow. And so how do we want the system to support what we think the processes should be? So this point about DCBS does the eligibility. If there is a requirement, a work requirement associated with that, then if the client is willing to go and see a career coach, we'll auto-schedule at that point. And we can go into, I can go into some detail about how all that works. Amy probably would be a lot better than me now that I've explained it to her. But anyway, the whole point is, hey, let's get them right from the eligibility over and get them on the path to whether it's employment or education and training or whatever. So that's the discussions we've been having, all right?
Yeah.
Anything in depth as far as cost and my rewards and things like that, no, that's not what I'm doing.
Okay. So what about, employers and stuff. We have a guy here who offers really great training to become an electrician. You're paid while you train. You end up going from 15 to 20 to 25 within months. Fleming County cannot find electricians.
Yeah.
Fleming County. You know, Flemingsburg. Hospital and all that stuff. You can't find an electrician.
Yeah.
And he's got classes that will fast track you and help the employer and stuff. How do we get him where it's one of the doors they can open to, you might have aptitude in this, you might like this. Lineman, you can go 10-week course and get a job. How can we start opening those doors to get around all the this part to write into? Here's these 10 training programs. You know, I just learned yesterday about what they're doing with KCTS and all the things. They'll pay you to go to school. You get $3,600, and there are like 20 EMT and all that kind of stuff that I just learned about yesterday. So
it's really, truly, you know, all these things have been kind of separate and operating in their own program area, and it's really now that we're having the conversations about we want to move there are work requirements for a number of programs in our benefits in our human services area, but our human services workers have been the ones who have been responsible for sending the referrals and sending them onto these programs, and that's not what they're trained to do.
Right.
You know, they're trained to determine eligibility and to help connect people with those resources. But we really, this is an overall approach to shifting those job and career services to our workforce boards, to our ads, to our, you know, the folks in the communities who are actually doing those services. And so that's why we wanted to start with the SNAP employment and training and move on to the community engagement for the Medicaid population, because it's going to be a gradual growth. And part of that is going to be in each community, do we have an electrician program? Do we have a lineman program? You know, what are those resources that we can put people right into if they have that aptitude and, you know, they're able to do that?
And we have another problem. Our biggest employer in our county has 32 people going to 40. I cannot, for the life of me, he's hiring now and can't find it up. He has not gone to the Career Center or connected. Ethan came out and met with him personally a few times. He won't list his jobs there. Mm. Can't find enough people. Because he's viewing that as only the dregs are the ones that come in anyway. They're not the people I want.
Yeah, they had a news story last night on the local news up in Louisville where they were looking for 5,000 electrician and construction workers for all the construction they're doing up there right now, and they can't fill them. It's the trade jobs that are really tough to get, right? Yeah. So here's my question. Since you asked it, Tracy, I'm going to ask you the question. So when I walk into the Career Center, right, is there a big sign that says, hey, we're hiring electricians today at $15.50 an hour? Come over and see me? I mean, how do they know when they walk in there? Or does our Career Center say, hey, come on in and register?
Do you know about?
We'll put you with a career.
You know, we
can
ask our career center.
Our career centers. I mean, usually they'll sit down with a career counselor and they'll tell them what jobs are open. We do have boards where they're, you know, where jobs are posted, and they can, if they take the time, they can sit down and look what jobs are posted.
How many people from the career center do they send you for your classes?
Well, when we post them, 10, 12 at least, when we have a class. Yeah. But those are promoted for 6 months or longer.
Hey, so, I'll give you my observation. I'm the new guy, right? 3 months into the job. So I'm in a career center. I won't even tell you what a career center it is. I'm in a career center last week, and I'm watching these guys do their UI, and then the guy go under focus and register that. And this woman's sitting over in a cubicle, and every so often she gets up and she goes over and gives them a card and says, hey, so-and-so's hiring. If you're interested, come over and talk to me. And I thought to myself, hey, listen, if I walked in the door and I just wanted employment, I'm not saying everybody walks in the door and wants employment, but if I walked in the door, if I didn't have to go through the register and UI and all this other stuff because somebody said, hey, we're hiring today over here, why would I just go over and get in that line and get what I really ultimately want, right? I don't want to spend an hour on focus. I just want to get employed. Now, that doesn't mean your population is doing that. I'm just saying, I'm surprised when I walk in there that there's not some path that says, hey, come over here. We want you to fill an application because we're hiring today. And it's a really good company, and it's got benefits and everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Because they can't find enough people. There's just this disconnect of, we've got the system where you're supposed to list your jobs and go when you want to find a job. Our people can't get there to find the job, and our employers go, for some reason, we don't give credence to the existing system.
Well, and the state says that you have to do focus before you do anything else. As soon as you walk in the career center, you're directed to focus. There isn't that option of, come over here and find a job.
State policy
says you have to do focus before you do anything else.
Well, I'm going to throw, and I don't want to go down this long discussion, but I'll throw some conversation out that's common and constant with what I do. We'll have a whole lot of interest when it's promoted that I'm going to have a class. I mean, a whole lot of interest. People say, yes, I want to be an electrician. That sounds like a great thing. And we'll have a huge number of people that says, I want to be there. And they read the fine print, drug screen required. Oh, maybe I want to do something else. Gone.
So how many times have we done your class and they come for the first half of the day and at lunch I think you drug tested them?
Yes.
And then they wouldn't come back the afternoon.
Right. I mean, and everybody's interested and they want the money. They want the possible career. Oh, you mean I got to not take drugs? Go. And that's where I said 10 to 12. We may have a huge amount of people interested and only so many actually be there.
And that's, and I don't mean this to sound harsh, but it's probably going to anyway, but that's a choice that by creating this community engagement requirement in Medicaid, you know, people have their health care right now, but by creating that community engagement requirement, there are going to have to be some choices made by individuals about, is it, you know, am I going to continue down the route and continue to have, you know, the drugs in my world, or am I going to make the choice to go down this other path because I won't have these benefits any longer if I don't do this. And so the intention is there to change the behavior. It's not going to work for everybody.
Employers are changing now.
Right.
Well, but I was told that employers now are starting to drop the drug test requirement. You can be a functioning alcoholic.
When we get into show the trades, up, show there you
up
go.
To work, show up to work, work till 5, do an excellent job, and start pounding the beer at 5:01. Why not? Why can't I go home and smoke a joint? Is what the younger folks are saying.
In the skilled trades.
I show up and I'm fine. Constant. Especially in the skilled trades.
I mean, I get the liability aspect on the job because maybe they are inhibited, but at the same point, at the same time, it's like I don't know how to solve that one.
Yeah, that's
the reason why there's such a big need for skilled tradesmen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So what part of Kentucky Health, because of the point you brought up, is addressing the behavioral health and chemical dependency issues?
There, and that's not included in this presentation. I'm sorry that I don't have that as part of it, but the Kentucky Health has a provision in it that expands coverage for substance use disorder treatment. There's currently a 16-bed limit on providers. They can only have 16 beds that are Medicaid-designated beds for residential treatment, and we've asked the federal government to waive that requirement so we have more substance use beds available across the state. You know, there will be some requirements that providers have to meet. We're not just going to lift the requirement and say, okay, go forth and open up all your beds. But that's one part that we've requested. We've also requested for Medicaid to allow us to cover longer periods of treatment and different types of treatment. So right now they'll only cover a longer period of treatment if it's a residential. But what we know from treatment is that they need that residential, but then they need the ongoing services that are outpatient. So we're asking for the flexibility to cover that for a longer period of time.
Because at 16 beds now, you're looking at what, going to 34?
Lifting the waiver.
Just lifting?
Lifting the restriction. So waiving that restriction of 16 beds so that they can have more than 16 beds.
We're talking in Nicholas County to the addiction recovery centers that has the 16-bed programs. And they've got waiting lists for people that want to get in or need to get in.
Right.
And it's very, quiet. Because the thing is, it's like, do you want a prison in your backyard? Or do you want, again, we don't want a Suboxone clinic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if we can help treat, this could be a different animal. But our judge was told by other counties, you can have it. I'm not going to get reelected if I put it in. So this is another. But you need it
more than
we do. You need the treatment centers.
Yeah.
We talked about starting off the conversation. Husband has a business and someone overdosed in their business today. That's bizarre. So the problem is just going to get worse and worse. It's like, when do we step up and say, okay, we really have to deal with it? So I applaud the idea of if we can get people to provide the treatment, and a very successful program too. A lot of people on their staff's gone on to get masters, PhDs, are high-paying jobs, and it's an addiction. You can treat it. Just as you can, alcohol programs work, right? 12-step programs?
Yep.
You can get patches to quit smoking. They're all addictions. When we put you in jail for, though, it's changing the mindset is going to be a big challenge.
It is. It is. It's changing the mindset along a lot of different behaviors on all sides of the equation, on employers, on our beneficiaries, on schools, on everything. It's a mind shift. It's a big change for everybody. Just to get back, though, to how it impacts you and your services and your strategic plan. So the SNAP Employment and Training Services, SNAP Employment Training Program, currently are provided through Department for Community-Based Services, but only in 20 counties. And the reason for this is, and if you all know this, forgive me for repeating it, but based on the welfare reform in the 1990s and then moving through the recession that we had starting in 2006, 7, and 8, there were waivers of the work requirement allowed for counties where there was a certain unemployment level. And Kentucky initially qualified for waivers in all 120 counties. Gradually, they've added counties back in, so there's a work requirement to receive your SNAP benefits, your food stamp, what used to be food stamp benefits, for what's called able-bodied adults without dependents. ABODs is our acronym for that. We have an acronym for everything. The plan, because the unemployment rate, even though there are struggles to find qualified people and
lots of different areas, our unemployment rates overall have moved down, and the job opportunities have moved up in many different areas, but we've still kept those waivers in place under prior administrations. They just kept them in place. So currently we only have 20 counties where there's an actual work requirement for our SNAP population. The governor wants to lift those waivers from those counties, from additional counties, and wants to do it in a very careful and cautious way so that it's not just saying, okay, everybody has a work requirement now, you know, go forth and conquer, because that's the wrong way to do it. But just by looking at strategically, where are there better employment opportunities, let's lift the waiver in these counties. Where are there better supports, let's lift those waivers in these counties. So, and I know this is very complicated, it's a lot of information. It is very complicated. We're trying to make it simpler. Our DCBS offices provide those employment and training programs in 20 counties, but they don't really have the capacity to first of all do it. That's not kind of what they typically handle in their offices. They handle the benefits eligibility, but they also they don't want to hire additional state staff in 100 other counties to do the job placement services and to do the job counseling. That's where we shifted and said, wouldn't it make sense for that career coaching and job services to really be handled by those workforce boards who are in the career centers and the ads, that whoever's already doing it, wouldn't it make sense to shift it rather than hire state staff and add to expense where we don't need to? It's already happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question about that.
Yes.
Because when you're talking about extra numbers of caseloads coming in and all of that,
right,
that does require extra staff.
It does.
So when is that going to be addressed in any detail as far as how it's going to be funded?
So that's part of the reason why we've combined it with the community engagement. So to implement Kentucky Health, we will receive 90% federal funding and with a 10% state match to get these services started. So for some of the capacity we would need in the career centers, initially it would be a federal match of 90%. So that's distinct. Ongoing, it would still be, because it's a Medicaid service, it would still be a 75% federal dollar to 25% state dollar match. And that match can come from, you know, if you all have funding streams that are not federal dollars, that can be used as state match to continue that funding stream for the provision of those services. The other funding stream that's available out there is the SNAP ENT 50-50, so it's 50% federal and 50% state. That is available to any partner across the state who wants to step in and say, I can help provide these employment and training services. And they get that 50% match, and then they have a 50%, you know, funding stream that could be a state grant that they have. It could be private funds that they have. They have a foundation, whatever it is. There's a 50-50 partner match that is available also through the federal government, and that's through the SNAP program. So we're trying to put together a funding model that shows the combination of those funding streams, but we're also trying to get estimates of how many people we anticipate in each county would be part of that kind of phase-in approach for both SNAP starting in January and community engagement in July.
And I'm wondering, too, again, in the small rural counties, our folks can't get in to the career centers. And we closed a lot so that the volume of people going through now is higher. And I was hoping we'd have that map showing everything that was closed that you had put together for us originally.
Where
they all go, maybe for the next meeting, but the idea being, if there are these SNAP programs, it's like, how can we take this to the local level, where we know our people, we know who needs work, it's how do we connect, and how do we engage local employers, and hopefully do that on a regional basis, because Robertson County is smaller than we are right next door, Fleming County can't find the electricians. In other words, we could form our own group of 4, 5, 6, whatever counties, you know, because Lexington is part of our ad, and their needs are completely different than ours. We really need a multi-level approach, mm-hmm, not just a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, so your hub is in Lexington, right? So if you've got somebody that's in Bourbon County, I made this in a good example, Are they coming here or are they going to, what's in Tenco there? I can't read what county
that is. We
can't go
to Tenco, can we?
Bourbon County. I usually recommend they go to Lexington for the career services. And
there's one right there in Tenco, that county right there. I think it's Montgomery County. It has a satellite.
That's not too bad, Mount Sterling, for them.
Is that another option for them?
It is. And I was just, what you were talking about, Bourbon County, SNAP, or DCBS, is in my building. Mm-hmm. I'm adult education. I'm on the first floor. SNAP is on the second floor. And what you were saying, I completely understand that about the waiver on the 20 hours that they were sending people down, because we've not seen anyone from upstairs in a long time. So this is all good news for me and for adult education. I want them to use us as because I do want to develop the work skills of those in Bourbon County. And I think every county in the 17 region will have that same setup, you know, SNAP, send to adult education, send to the career centers, whatever. Let's all just work together.
And you say you're in adult ed in Lexington?
I'm adult education in Bourbon County.
In Bourbon County,
yes.
Okay.
Right. Which is right next door to us.
Yeah.
Our adult ed is right under our library, right
but
downtown.
It did make me wonder the compliance issue. What if they will not come? What if they come for 10 hours instead of 20 hours?
For the community engagement?
The community engagement, yes.
There will be a month for them to make up any hours. If they get 10 hours in a month, and they would need to then make up the additional 10 hours by the end of the following month. So there is kind of a grace period for that. But they can have their Medicaid suspended for not meeting that community engagement 20 hours. Now, there are good cause reasons. You always want to make sure that if there's a situation, like there's someone who's experienced domestic violence, they've been evicted, there's a natural disaster, you want to provide all those good cause reasons so that we don't unnecessarily prevent someone from their benefits. But they are required to have that 20 hours per week unless there's some good cause.
Per week or per month?
Per week. So it's 80 hours per month.
They need motivation.
Yes.
That's motivation.
Right. Mm-hmm. The Medicaid benefits is intended to be part of that motivation. Mm-hmm. Right now, and I don't know if you all know this, but in a household receiving SNAP benefits, if there is one child under the age of 18 in that household, every adult in that household is exempt from the work requirement. So it's not going to happen on that program level until changes get made at the federal level with that. But the Medicaid requirement is imposed because it's a different benefit and it's a different agency. We would be able to, anybody else who's not that primary caregiver of that child would have that work requirement, that school requirement, the whatever the engagement activity is they choose. So, but again, this is all part of the intention for the SNAP employment and training piece of it, and yes, the funding will come with it. Whatever funding right now is flowing through DCBS to support these services, and there are some partner agencies who are receiving 50-50 SNAP funds, but we don't have enough of them. We're working to build that, and this is part of it. But those funds will come through the SNAP employment and training program for whoever provides those services. And that SNAP program is going to be a much smaller number of people. We have about 55,000 able-bodied adults across Kentucky who are receiving SNAP, who would have that requirement. So our thought is that would be a good kind of pilot to be able to start testing the waters of how does this work at the local level with our smaller group of people, and then move into the Medicaid population, which is going to be about four times as many people.
Yeah, and then hopefully move beyond that to
what
we're dealing with how do we get more people jobs and more jobs for people
that match.
They're not matching. So.
Yeah. And so for transportation, again, everybody who's involved in this is trying to think outside the box. We have met with Goodwill of Kentuckiana. They're interested in, they have a cars for work or ride for work program or something, and they're interested in possibly exploring ways that we can partner through that program to help kind of meet the transportation gaps. But we've also had an initial conversation, and I'm hoping that we can make something work from this with Lyft. They have some ideas on how they could possibly partner in the state of Kentucky for some of the more rural areas, and Lyft drivers
that could be a community engagement. You know, they also have this really neat program where they actually provide cars, and they have a place where cars get parked. And if you want to be a Lyft driver, you come pick up your car, you drive for Lyft, you bring the car back, and you know, you start earning, or you help with transportation needs. So we're looking at how can we be creative, and we're looking outside the box in places where we have issues with transportation.
So Lyft, and are you also talking to Uber? They've had that.
We haven't yet. We started with Lyft, and we decided that we would follow that conversation first, and then we might shift to talking with Uber as well. But they were interested in what we were doing.
Uber good. A lot of churches have buses too.
We thought about that too. They're sitting in the parking lot during the week a lot of times. You know, how do we engage the faith community to look at? What are you doing with your van during the week?
We have a regional bus service that's amazing. A lot of folks in our area don't even know about. It's $5 to get into Lexington one way. So it's not just by the mile for
that's cheap.
Medicare.
That's pretty good.
But it's making people more aware of it, and how do we get more of that service, and then they can connect to come to Lexington. You still have to, you know, not work for that day, so you're out the $7 an hour or whatever you're making.
Right.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool.
Provided some information later today.
She's actually, you know, they're both actually on the email.
Yeah.
From
Andy.
So.
Oh, okay.
It's just that you were talking about statewide information. And
yes.
I thought it would kind of be better to roll this back down so that everybody understood what we're really talking about here.
Right. It is. Yes, thank you.
No sweat. So we're looking at 5 mandatory counties right now. Of the 20, we have 5
right.
In the Bluegrass region. Mostly right around here, right around Spokane County. Right now we have 5,634 A-bots. So, I mean, just kind of planning on how many clients that really looks like. Andy put 20% to it. I think it can be anywhere between 10 and 30. It really depends on the community. It depends on the population that you're...
Right.
These people have been, these individuals have been wavered for a long, long time.
Yes, they have.
Right? So some of them we think might be working, some of them we don't know that work. Some of them might have turned over 55, we're not really paying attention to it. You know, there's a, I mean, we were talking about a different state and a different process that went down. So we started with 72,000 possibles, and we had less than 1,000 clients in the end. So... And that was in Ohio. So it's a change of paradigm for all these clients. And
yes.
Then and they're going to be volunteers. So they get to decide whether I want to continue to play or not play anymore.
Right. For the employment training.
Right.
Right. They still have the work requirement.
They had the requirement.
Yeah.
Right.
And the time limits.
Right. So they... But so generally...
They say if I'm volunteering and they show up and they actually work at it, that's a good thing. If they say,
right.
Hey, I don't need any help. I'll take care of it myself.
Right.
I've got to keep it up.
So they're not mandated to come into the career centers.
Right. They're not mandated to come into the career centers. They can.
Right. They can choose to, but they have a requirement to either work or be in school, some sort of training for a minimum of 20 hours per month, typically.
Yeah.
Sometimes it varies. And they can get 3 bad months. And right now, the way Kentucky has it set up until the end of September is... We have a mandatory program where they have to go to the employment training program. We're changing to a voluntary program effective October 1st. Basically what that does is it simplifies the administrative process, bless you, to where right now under mandatory, they can get a bad month where they don't meet the hours, and then they have a conciliation period. They come back in, there's counseling, it's a very... it's a very burdensome process on both sides, whereas the voluntary changes it to where they have the 3 bad months. If they're 3 bad months in a row, they do lose their SNAP benefits. Some of them are just going to decide that it's not worth it because some people are only receiving maybe $15, $20, $30 a month in SNAP benefits, and they're going to say, forget it, I'm not going to do this. And I think the statistic that Melissa quotes, though, was within about three months of losing those benefits, about 80% end up working, end up somewhere in the workforce. So I think it's that.
But it's
helped
us more than 20 hours.
Yes, we
have. And again, for us, overall for the Workforce Investment Board and what we're going to be charged to do, the big part of this is these are some of the neediest people.
Right.
And if it's a pilot program for other programs that we can streamline and get everybody talking to one another, be it systems or just in general, it's going to help us serve and solve the overall problems that we have that are not going away. You know, drug addiction or drug problem going up.
Right.
Employers say again and again and again, can't find people, and then we have people who can't find jobs. So how we connect. So this is very important. I just want to make a note, too. We've got 15 minutes until the end of our first session. We want to respect everyone's time. This is really complex, as we're seeing already. I came in knowing there's something here, but whatever. So what we want to do is look at the committee and say, do we want to meet every month, every other month, have guest speakers that come in that we can continue to network with, and if you've got someone who can be here with us, great, and let the other ad districts know that we're starting to take the lead on this problem.
Right.
Looking at it as a pilot for all the other things. You're on a call with all the other heads on things or interact with them. So the learning that we have here won't be lost or kept here. We want to share it on a state basis.
Oh, best practices? That would be great.
And we want to do the kind of the challenge to, we're talking about trying to come up with something. What are you guys doing? We want to hear back from you. Yeah. Mabel's great on the networking and all those kind of things. So what we're doing here we see is going well beyond. We're looking at it for the whole state of Kentucky. We're just the first to step up to say we want to see about what we're going to do and how we're going to address.
Well, and everybody's looking at Kentucky to see what Kentucky's doing with this and to kind of see how successful we are at it. You know, so once we receive that approval, combining all these pieces and, to your point, making those connections and making them in a small way first and then using them for the larger Medicaid population, people are asking questions from all across the country. So, you know, what we built here has the potential to be a model for what people do first in neighboring states, and then, you know, we've got calls from Louisiana is calling to say, what are you guys doing? You know, how are you doing it? Who are you working through? Anyway, a number of states. Kansas is asking. There's lots of interest in what we're trying to put together. So.
And for me personally, if I were to take this home and read it, over my head, or all the questions that I can't get answered. So I think it's really helpful for us to be able to ask the questions as we go through, deepen our understanding, so that we've got a solid base to build upon, and then to take back to our entire Workforce Investment Board as the committee, and then kind of distill down, as we did, another third grade level PowerPoint.
And speaking of PowerPoints, I do, because you were kind enough to come today, I hope that you can get us through the rest of it. We're almost there, right?
That's actually the last slide.
Always good.
The question slide. So,
good.
And I think we've covered the question slide.
Yeah.
Hey, Tracy, some of the statistics you shared about this region initially, is that something that you can send to us on an email?
WETCO. This is an annual update. This is the actual WETCO. Yeah, it was scary. I had no idea. Yeah. So, and it's online, too. It's like, holy moly. I didn't realize you were in such good shape. So this is an area. And it's online. But it shows from year to year. These are the ones that they put for us. We looked terrible. And we had no idea. They tried to share with me. Another challenge.
Yeah.
And we're glad to, both of us, one of us, however many of us come back, if you all are going to have one of the meetings and you'd like for us, just let us know the schedule at the time. We'll make sure we put it on somebody's calendar to be here. You know, if we need to have one of our SNAP EMT folks from DCBS, we're working very closely together with everybody. We'll send whoever you need. Stay as long as you want us to, leave whenever you want us to, you know, whatever that looks like, but we're committed, this is what we're doing.
We have a really highly engaged and intelligent and varied board, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
We have some killer people on our board. So, and as you've seen, we've got some folks who really care and are on the front lines here, and we had a couple other community members who could not meet. And there may be other general folks who want to start coming to these and or again, we'll be reporting back to the entire board. We'll have a committee report each month, so, or every other month. Your guys' time. We're going to do it 2 hours, so I'd like to take time now to discuss or give some thought here. Do we want to meet on a monthly basis, on an every other month basis, or?
I think we've got a timeline that's going to happen pretty quick.
Yeah.
I think a monthly, at least through January, a monthly would be adequate. Maybe.
And then we'll see from there.
Yeah.
And assess. Do we have a motion?
Motion for
a
monthly
meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Monthly meetings. Okay.
Let's look at our schedule because I think September is pretty booked, and I'm open for the 27th. That's a month, basically a month from now, roughly.
September?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, my daughter's getting married.
Oh, is she?
Every other month I can. She doesn't get married once.
Hey, don't let your personal life interfere.
Well, then.
No, where are my priorities?
Then I could be here on the 21st.
No, that's great.
21st.
The 21st.
20th, 22nd, 19th.
19,
20,
I'm okay.
I can't personally be here most days.
19, 20. Can you do 18 or 22nd?
Is that 2 o'clock?
Well, we can move the time. We can make it 10 in the morning, too, if you want.
I can leave my class on the 22nd.
22nd?
I can't, but you all.
No, we want to see when you can. So if we can't do, I can do Monday the 25th.
I'm coming. Yeah, we'll be at 6:00.
Okay, you got that. So we are at here. What about the week of the 11th then? You're at the summit.
Okay, I'm not on the week of the 11th.
We can work this. I want to. Christy and Kelly, and we can email you the dates. We won't make you sit through us working out the schedule, but we really, really do appreciate you coming and speaking to us and making our offer for the future as well.
Very thankful.
We have an incredible team that's just really committed, and it's growing. I mean, you're now part of our team, so congratulations. But I will email the presentation from today, but also we have a presentation that kind of walks through the SNAP, a little more of the SNAP information that we've used with our local workforce boards. I'll send that to you, and then
the more we know, the better we'll
be. Right.
Yeah, right. I think the point here is communication is the key, right?
Yes.
So we got to have a lot of communication between now and first next year.
Yeah.
If there's a way we can get everybody that was in attendance, because I always pick up on certain people asking questions, try to put them in the order that they were sitting, so I know who's who. Because there's a couple things came up today. I'll probably do some follow-up on email, asking some questions.
Yeah, so we can be your
I'm not crazy.
Token.
Okay. Take care of that.
I can get it completely accurate.
Okay.
No, you're fine. I saw you. I just need just a visual, quick representation. This doesn't get posted. So I'll go through and do
all that. Because what we'd also like now, with this is kind of the template, is from our one-stop center, the look at how we went from so many down to a few, and we've got our one-stop operator, and I'm sure you guys have great ideas and what you're facing. Too. I mean, what are wait times like? What are this and that? How can you might you need help? And is there a way again to do some handoff again to the local communities? How can we work with the local communities that we can start outreaching so that I can finally get my guys to list jobs at the one-stop center, and then get our employers to also look there, and maybe it's go to adult ed and get online there versus.
Well, part of our 90-day plan is just getting this thing off the ground is to go out and meet with the judges, the mayors, and get them behind us because we'd like to see an access point in every county that the Bluegrass serves. So you don't have to send your people to Lexington. That if you've got 5 people that are interested in training, we can send somebody down there to you however many times it needs to be done to get them the services right there in Nicholas County.
So if you can be our guest speaker into us a PowerPoint and everything next time.
Sure. Be glad to.
That would be wonderful. Because, again, we're going to take this and then fill in the rest of our whole board, and then we'll have it available that we can share it with other ad districts, too. So we're helping educate
everybody. I don't mind to do that at all. Yep. Glad to do it.
Third grade simple, please.
Okay.
That's our motto.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And we will
receive my cards.
Please,
that'd
be great.
You've been here 3 months.
No, but you can find me. I'm easy to find.
I know. And these are our offices. We do carry them with us.
Okay. So thank you again.
Yes, thank you so much.
I'm going to make sure I get you mowed. So I think the only thing left when Tracy gets back is to try and figure out the schedule for today. And you all totally lost me when you were, I don't know, was there any date for any month?
For the next meeting?
Yes.
Not yet.
Okay.
So we're due to the three different schedules. We're looking for October 1st, the week of October 1st. Which I'm going to see.
So you provided that information?
Is today Wednesday?
Numbers?
Today is Wednesday.
I have probably
October 2nd on Monday? It's probably going to be the best date so far. So, how's everybody else looking on October the 2nd?
This is money attached to it. Really, how many services and where we can
get it? Get it
to all week. It's really dependent on the funds. Right?
That's our suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Talk about us, October 2nd. That's border. You have to have. That, and it's not.
And just as a reminder,
second
and
third,
to be a standing committee, you do have to have a set schedule.
So,
okay, it would be great to get your input and tweaks.
Right,
and we are currently
from other states trying.
The fourth Wednesday of the month.
Ohio does.
To be consistent, that would be the ideal thing.
Hmm. What did you say, John?
The fourth Wednesday of the month is what we're at right today.
Right.
And to have consistency, that.
Yes. Well, I mean, I don't think you. As long as we set it today, it doesn't have to necessarily fall on the same day that we met today. This is the initial meeting, but we are supposed to have a set schedule after that.
If we go.
And you also only have to publish, like we say, it's going to be every other month.
Right.
Right. And if you cancel it, there's no penalty for.
No.
So, but no. You just have to put it out there.
Right.
But those are the names.
But it's one exactly.
Well, I think we've got, you know, November, December coming up, which is going to be terrible in the later parts of the month for most of us for holidays. I'm thinking
if
you say you're out the 2nd and 3rd of October, maybe the 5th of October.
What's that? You went with the
all that week.
There's not a ton of clients. It's not like Eastern Kentucky.
So what about if you back it up to the 4th Wednesday, September 20th?
Eastern Kentucky.
27th.
Tracy's out at that point. She's got a wedding to go to.
Oh, okay.
I have 12 people.
Yeah, her daughter's with us.
So what constitutes a quorum of this group? Mm-hmm.
And to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure who is. Are you all volunteering to be on the committee? Because some of you were not.
I was only adjunct because of the topic today.
Right.
So, because I'm officially, I think, I can't remember which committee I'm on, but I'm on that.
You're allowed to be on more than one.
I know that.
Just wanted to point that out.
As far as I know, we definitely are on this.
That's right.
But I'm not sure about Steve Sig. I think he is definitely on. So it depends on who is. I mean, anyone can come. But if you are
right
on the committee, then
that constitutes the core
issue. Right.
So we might have to do a doodle poll or something to find out, or skip September and go to October.
I think we've already, you know, Lisa and I have already kind of got the October.
What do you got?
Trying to find the October that matches.
Well, but if you go with your all three, if you three can be there for sure, go with that because you're. And then, did Steve have his? He keeps having a medical procedure.
Yeah, I don't remember. He just said he couldn't be here today.
Okay, right. I think it's this week.
And we get Brian as the other. So,
we're into the second week of October.
What do you have to report?
We've got the board meeting here on the 10th in October, right?
Right.
We would want to meet before then, I would assume.
Super.
The board meeting is, it's not a full board meeting. That's the executive committee. Exactly.
Oh, on the 10th?
Yes. The full board doesn't meet again until...
We have to change that.
Yes.
Quarterly? We have all this work to do, but we're only meeting quarterly as a board.
Yeah.
Just the executive that meets monthly. So we might look at changing that back. So... But I'm available that day if that's a good day, if the 10th is a good day for you.
Yeah.
October 10th?
Yes.
Okay.
And we've got 1:30, so if we meet, do you want to meet after? So we don't know how long this meeting, but executive meetings, how long do those normally go?
It's anybody's guess.
Okay. Do you want to meet before?
Yes.
10 and noon? That'll give us.
On the 10th?
Strategic.
So what time on the 10th then did you say?
10 till noon. So we can bring back some of our folks. We'll start getting kind of our guest speakers. And a lot of the first part of this will just be education so that we have a real clear three-dimensional picture of what we're dealing with and then how we can tie that into kind of a pilot program that works for these folks. How do we expand to everybody?
Is there a speaker right there? I thought that was a good idea.
October 10th?
Can you be here on the 10th?
Sure.
Of October,
yep.
Todd.
Okay.
And then looking forward, if we go ahead and nail down some dates, that will be better. That's the 10th of October, and then that would be...
It's a second,
the second
Tuesday.
Second Tuesday.
The 14th. Again, that is a full board meeting. At noon, so we can do 10 to 12 again on the 14th because we're already here. Does that work for you? So again, it looks like we're going to do the second Tuesdays, but we'll do 10 to noon. So whether it's before a regular board meeting, a full board, or an executive board. And we can reassess January, February if we want to meet to a every other month or quarterly, but we're at least meeting.
Second Tuesday, 10 through January.
At least, yeah.
Good schedule.
Good. Because we've got to get, there are other programs like yours too.
Oh, that's fine, yeah.
That we've got to connect. We've got to get them right then and there.
Anything to do with, like, you mentioned the lineman training?
Yes.
I mean, that's not something that's a line. There's all kinds. KCTCS, whatever you got with them, well, they've got plenty of different.
Emergency
programs.
Medical service paramedic, emergency medical technician, phlebotomist, arc welder, power mechanic, gas metal arc welding, lineman, machine tool operator, shield and metal arc welding, workplace safety specialist, maintenance, industrial maintenance technician. Right now,
that's a big one.
$3,900 bucks, pay your whole training. So it's free education. We just got to let people know these are available. And this is just at Maysville.
Well, Maysville's got plenty of satellite places too.
Well, the community college system has Mount Sterling, Moorhead, Cincinnati. Close for you, close for us.
Again, we can, I think some of the folks are drifting away. If there's anything, we'll get a schedule out.
Yes.
So we, and we can stay and talk as long as we want.
Oh, sorry, we need to do adjournment.
Yes.
We need to do an adjournment, and then we can talk.
So we will continue the rest of our agenda. We got through the first part.
I really think if you're going to take this focus on Medicaid, I'm not sure the rest of the agenda until we get past this initial kickoff is even relevant. because there's only so many hours in the day and so much time to spend on it. And this is not the only program that we have to deal with. So we can, but I would say you can pick that up in January when you see where you're at with Medicaid and go back and consider it then. Would be my suggestion on it.
Okay, we will take a look at, because knowing what we have to deal with, pursuing new funding streams would not have to be our committee at all. It could be discussed. You've had experience going after grants.
Yes, and I can tell you that until the question cost is resolved, you will not get funding outside of the state of Kentucky. That the state of Kentucky has funds available that they can't spend from time to time, and we can certainly go after those.
Is she okay?
But you are not likely to get additional funds from the Department of Labor, Department of Health and Human Services, or any of the other folks from the federal level until that's resolved. Hopefully that will be okay in the near future.
So we're going to put once resolved. So right. We for sure can move that one back.
And just the only other thing I'll tell you is just remember that's a very time-consuming process as well. So we're back to the so many hours in the day.
Right.
Okay.
Which is why we want to take a look at what we've got, prioritize, and
right
where we can have the most impact. So very
okay.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you. So if there's nothing else at this point, then thank you very much. We're set for our next couple of meetings.
Yeah.
Thank you. At this point, I guess we need a motion to adjourn.
A motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And thank you again for coming. Good. We're only 6 minutes over. We will always respect your time, okay? We know how important this is.
Good information, though.
Yes, it is. And didn't want to rush through it.
And maybe I do have some other information I'll share with you since I gave you that thing.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, what we normally get here, I brought my other stuff. It's outside of the pages.
Thank you. So now we're adjourned. You're welcome.
Take that.